This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky, March 2012. Well, as the sun sets, we have a lovely region of the sky over towards the western horizon. Orion down at the bottom, just beginning to set probably after sunset. Above that is the constellation of Taurus the Bull with the bright star Aldebaran, the eye of the bull. Carrying on in the same direction from Orion, you come to that very little lovely group of stars called the Pleiades cluster. But they're now setting. What will we see? Well, up to the left of Orion, we have the two stars Castor and Pollux, the heads of the heavenly twins, Gemini. Over to the left, we have the constellation of Cancer the Crab, really quite faint, but with a very nice cluster called M44, the beehive cluster at its heart. Nice to look at with binoculars. Moving over to the south, a little bit to the southeast, Leo the Lion, below which, this year, we will see the planet Mars. Coming further over, just rising in the east after sunset, is the constellation of Virgo. And there, in fact, is the planet Saturn. All of these will come back a little bit later on. But do look high up in the sky, over towards the north, and you'll see Ursa Major, very nicely positioned high up. There are many very nice objects to view with a telescope in Ursa Major. And if you look at the night sky page, follow down under the stars, you'll find some of them mentioned. And you'll see quite a bright star just above the eastern horizon, rising as the evening moves on. And that's the star Arcturus in the constellation of Bootes. So quite a nice skyscape to see. Well, the first half of March gives us one of the best times for viewing the planets for quite a long time. After sunset, we have Jupiter and Venus seen in the west, whilst Mercury, if you're lucky, will be seen below. Later, Mars, reaching opposition on the 3rd of March, will be seen south around midnight. Saturn will be rising well up into the evening sky. Well, Jupiter, it's been a wonderful planet to observe high in the sky over the last few months. It's still seen well up in the western sky after sunset, about 45 degrees, in fact, above the southwestern horizon, still shining at magnitude minus 2.2 in the constellation of Aries. Its angular size is now dropping as it moves away from us. It's about 36 arc seconds, dropping to 34 during the month. But a small telescope will still easily show the equatorial belts and also the four Galilean moons. Looking at it over the last few weeks, I've seen some quite prominent dark regions in the north equatorial belt, and they're called barges. Anyway, some months ago I said you must buy a telescope to have a look at Jupiter this year. I hope you have. Well, I mentioned Saturn earlier. It rises about 4 hours after sunset at the beginning of March and can be seen due south at around 3:30 a.m. Sadly, in contrast to Jupiter, Saturn is moving towards the lower part of the ecliptic and will not rise higher than about 31 degrees, depending, of course, where you actually live in the UK or elsewhere. A nice reason for going to the south of Europe, perhaps, to the Mediterranean. It's in Virgo, shining at magnitude plus 0.4, and it's about 7 degrees, slightly up and to the left, of the first magnitude star, Spica. A nice thing, however, is that the rings are now opening out and are about 15 degrees to the line of sight, so they will appear appreciably wider than they have done for a year or so. And it's well worth looking at them now with a small telescope. You should easily see Cassini's division, and under good seeing with a slightly bigger telescope perhaps, you might even spot what is called Encke's division in the outer ring, and also the inner, rather elusive C ring. Mercury. It reaches its greatest elongation from the Sun on March the 5th, so you should see it quite easily about half an hour after sunset, perhaps for another half an hour or so. It's down to the lower right of Venus, and about 12.5 degrees above the horizon, half an hour after sunset. But it then dims very rapidly. In fact, it drops from magnitude minus 0.4 to plus 0.6 in just 5 days, and so rapidly will disappear from view. as it drops back towards the sun. Well, Mars, I'll basically talk about in the highlight of the month. It reaches opposition on the 3rd of March, which means it'll be due south around midnight at an elevation of around 46 degrees. It has a magnitude of minus 1.2 and is moving retrograde below the belly of Leo the Lion. That apparent motion backwards across the sky is because the Earth is sort of moving around quickly on the inside track, and so our view of Mars against the background stars changes. Well, Venus is also prominent in the southwestern sky after sunset. Its angular separation from the Sun is about 44 degrees, and at sunset will actually be 38 degrees above the horizon, which is about as high as it ever gets. So in fact, it's a very good time to observe Venus. The angular size increases from about 18 to 25 arc seconds during the month. As it does so, however, the phase, which is the percentage we see illuminated, drops, in fact, from 64 to 49%. The result is that the brightness that we see, magnitude about minus 4.3, 4.4, stays pretty constant. It doesn't quite matter too much when we observe Venus. It always has the same basic brightness. If it's far beyond the Sun, most of it's illuminated. When it's nearer and bigger, far less is illuminated. And the two effects basically cancel out. So what about some highlights this month? Well, I guess the major highlight has to be the fact that during the first week of March, Mars is at opposition. So it'll be closest to the Earth, in fact, on the 5th. It's actually pretty good for much of March, so don't worry too much if it's too cloudy during the few days when it's closest. Oppositions of Mars occur about every 2 years and 2 months. But how close Mars will be, and hence how large its apparent size, as seen in our telescopes, varies by quite a bit, almost by a factor of two. This is the result of the elliptical orbits of Mars and, to a lesser extent, that of the Earth. To get the minimum possible separation, Mars must be closest to the Sun when at opposition, and the Earth must be furthest away. That actually happens in August each year, roughly. On the 27th of August 2003, Mars was just 56 million kilometres away and had an angular size of 25.1 arc seconds. That was the closest approach to the Earth for about 60,000 years. And we're going to have to wait again till about 2284 for it to be so close once more. Now, following such a close opposition, the distance at successive oppositions, every 2 years, 2 months, first increases and then reduces again. And sadly, this year, at opposition, Mars will be pretty much at its furthest distance, with a maximum angular size of just 13.81 arc seconds. Now, in the following years, in 2014, 2016, 2018, the angular size is going to increase again. Firstly to 15.16, then to 18.6, and in 2018, 24.31 arc seconds. So that's going to be a great year to observe it. As I said earlier, the maximum elevation from the UK is only about 46 degrees, but nevertheless, given a good evening with quite calm seeing, the atmosphere being quite steady, it's still well worth observing with a telescope. The North Polar Cap is tilted towards us, so should be easily visible. And around the time of closest approach, after midnight, the most prominent marking on Mars, which is called Syrtis Major, will be facing us. So let's hope for a few clear nights with good seeing. On March the 4th, there's quite a nice lineup of the planets Jupiter, Venus and Mercury, just after sunset. If you can find Mercury, and you probably would need binoculars, but don't use them near the Sun until the Sun basically has set, you might well see Uranus as well. If you place Mercury to the right of the field of view of a pair of binoculars, just over 2 degrees, just slightly down to the left, you'll see Uranus, shining at magnitude plus 5.9. So it should be fairly easily visible. So that's a nice chance to see Uranus. I highlighted March the 24th. That's when Saturn and its moons will be very nicely in the sky. Very nice grouping of the moons. A small telescope should easily see Titan, one of 8 inches or so more. We'll see some of the fainter moons as well. And in fact, on that day, the moon will have set a lot earlier, so it won't hinder our view. March the 25th, Jupiter and Venus will be in the sky with a thin crescent moon. It's always a good thing to look out for what they call Earthshine, the old moon in the new moon's arms. Venus at magnitude -4, roughly, will be in view well above Jupiter. Now, at the beginning of the month, Jupiter was higher up than Venus. Their positions have changed. So there we go. Quite a nice lot of things to see in March. I do hope you enjoy it and we get some nice clear skies.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now here's John Field telling us what you can see in the Southern Hemisphere night sky during March.
Kia ora and welcome to the March night sky from Carter Observatory. March sees our nights quickly becoming longer, and this means the opportunity for more observing. Our summer constellations of Taurus, Orion and Gemini are sliding towards the western horizon a little more each night. Low in the northwest, the Pleiades Matariki are setting earlier each evening and will soon be lost in our twilight sky. They will, however, reappear in our morning sky at the time of our winter solstice. Following the Pleiades is the V-shaped head of Taurus. The bright star Aldebaran, the follower of the Pleiades, marks one of the bull's eyes. This orange star is the 13th brightest star in the night sky. Current estimates put this star 65 light years away. The orange hue of Aldebaran means the star has a much cooler surface temperature than our own Sun. It is a red giant star in the final stages of its stellar evolution. The fainter stars of the V of the bull's head are formed by the more distant Hyades star cluster. In Greek mythology, they are half-sisters of the Pleiades. This cluster is estimated to be about 150 light-years away and contains over 100 stars that are brighter than 9th magnitude. This cluster includes a number of double or multiple stars. Almost due north in our early evening sky is a faint zodiac constellation of Cancer the Crab, which appears as 4 stars with a haze at the centre. In binoculars, this haze reveals itself to be a cluster of stars known as the Beehive. Although this cluster is about 500 to 600 light years away, it is about 3 times the size of the full moon as viewed here on Earth. Recent studies indicate that this cluster is a similar age and shares a similar motion through space to the Hyades. This may mean that long ago they shared a similar location during formation. Following the Crab across the sky and rising at sunset is the large constellation of Leo the Lion. Leo is one of the 12 zodiac constellations, and this constellation dates back to the time of the Persians. It later became associated with the legend of Hercules, and the killing of this lion was the first of its 12 tasks. The brightest star in Leo, Regulus, shines at magnitude 1.4 and is the 22nd brightest star in our night sky. It is a blue-white star and has a magnitude 7.6 orange-red companion that is visible in binoculars or a small telescope. In 1771, Regulus became associated with being one of the 4 Persian royal stars that were used to mark the times of the solstices and equinox by the ancient Persians. Regulus marked the summer solstice, Antares the autumnal equinox, Fomalhaut marked the winter solstice, and Aldebaran the spring equinox. Although these titles have become popular in archaeoastronomy, work done by scholars on the original text revealed that no mention of royal stars occurs, and the then association has come about by wishful thinking and repetition rather than fact. Currently there is an extra star in Leo. This bright star is the planet Mars, and in fact currently only Sirius is brighter. Mars reaches opposition on the 3rd of March, and during this period is when it is at its closest to the Earth. It will be at its brightest, and through a telescope, its largest. Unfortunately, Mars is not very close at this opposition, and will not be very interesting through small telescopes. Larger telescopes reveal a polar cap along with dark features on the planet's disk. As a day on Mars is slightly longer than our own, viewing at the same time in successive nights will reveal different features on the small rocky world. Rising up in the eastern sky around about 10 p.m. at the beginning of the month and at 8 p.m. by the end of the month is the planet Saturn. It all appears a very bright yellow star in the constellation of Virgo. The Milky Way runs from north to south in our evening sky and is at its brightest near our southern horizon. This thin pale band marks the plane of our galaxy. As light comes from the glow of the many distant stars, with the human eye we can see about 6,000 individual stars of the estimated 400 billion stars that form our galaxy. To many cultures, the Milky Way has been seen as a path or a river across the sky. To Māori in Aotearoa, it's Te Ikaroa, the long fish, and it's along this path at Tamariri Sound as he placed the stars into the heavens. The mottled appearance of the Milky Way comes from dark clouds of interstellar material that blocks the light of the more distant stars. Sitting in the southern part of our Milky Way is Crux, commonly called the Southern Cross, and nearby the two pointer stars. Between Crux and Canis Major sits the broken remains of the great ship Argo. Until 1752, it was the largest constellation. Then it was broken up into three parts, Carina the Keel, Vela the Sails, and Pupus the Poop Deck. One part was not retained, and that was Malus the Mast. This group of stars was then formed into a new constellation, Pyxis the Compass. This faint constellation has no targets of interest for small telescopes. Carina has a great number of objects to spot with the unaided eye. The brightest star in Carina is Canopus, the second brightest star in the night sky. It shines at magnitude -0.72. Until recently, the distance of this star ranged from 96 to 1,300 light-years. This was due to the unusual spectra of this star. With the launch of the Hipparchus satellite in 1989, allowing accurate measuring of this star's parallax. Parallax is the amount of movement a star exhibits compared to the more distant background stars as viewed from two different points. This star has an estimated mass of 8.5 times that of our Sun and is 13,000 times more luminous. The current estimate is 310 light-years, making Canopus the brightest star within 700 light-years of our solar system. The great ship Argo was associated with the legend of Jason and the Argonauts. The ship carried the crew on their quest to find the Golden Fleece. The ship winds along the Milky Way with its hull carrying the keel pointed towards the South Celestial Pole. This is the point that is overhead, the zenith at Earth's South Pole. It is around this point that all the stars in our southern sky rotate. In Wellington, its height is 41 degrees above our horizon. This corresponds with our latitude of 41 degrees south. This means that any star or constellation that is within 41 degrees of the South Celestial Pole will never set below a flat horizon here in Wellington. March the 20th marks the autumnal equinox here in the Southern Hemisphere. This time marks the time halfway between our summer and winter solstices. The sun rises due east and sets due west, and our day and night time hours are of similar length. From this time and until the time of the winter solstice, our nighttime hours are longer than our daytime hours. In Māori legend, the changing position of the sun's rising point along the horizon was related to Te Rā, the sun, and his two wives. Hine Raumati, the summer wife, and Hine Takarua, his winter wife. At the time of the summer solstice, he is with Hine Raumati. But then Hine Takarua starts calling him, and with much regret, he leaves for Hine Raumati and then hurries across the horizon to Hine Takarua, and he arrives at the time of the winter solstice. When he arrives, he hears the call of Hine Raumati and begins his journey back towards her along the horizon. We wish all of our listeners a happy equinox and hope the skies remain clear for you.